This is Mandy.
And this is Stephanie.
And you're listening to Two Blonde Sleuths.
All right, Stephanie, I have a case today that I do not think you've heard of because it is a Canadian case. The reason I chose this case, this is also episode 30.
And I hope everyone had a happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, we took off for Thanksgiving and we had sick kids and going out of town and things like that.
I ate way too much.
I did too.
I'm so ashamed of myself.
I know. So you got to get back in the swing of things. Stephanie was like, when are we going to record? And I was like, we need to because the holidays are coming up again.
It's going to mess us up again. I was trying to be like Johnny on the spot.
He did good, especially with your all the busy stuff that you are doing.
Sick kids are the worst.
I know. It's really hard. That I do not miss. Now mine can at least take themselves to the doctor themselves.
I know no one tells you when you have kids about when they get sick.
Oh, that's the part they leave out.
Yeah.
It's actually like one of the hardest parts.
Oh, yeah.
Besides
with kid sickness, because I'm already super neurotic, a simple ear infection, and don't ever WebMD or Google anything because it's always cancer and you're dying. I've gotten better with age, but I still don't like it.
I know, because especially too with a young one, like a really young one, you don't know what's wrong with them. They can't really tell you everything that's going on.
No.
So that is the hard part, for sure.
I'm just like, please give us medicine.
Now I have just dogs that get sick and eat something bad and get sick all over the house.
I saw you had a really sick pup.
Yeah, I did. So now it's them cleaning up after them instead of children. Mm-hmm. So. All right, let's get into this. Oh, yeah, episode 30. We said that. I repeated it. But so that's like a little milestone, right?
Mm-hmm. I've done 30 episodes. 30.
I've done two Mystery Mondays, and I didn't count those as regular true crime. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. They're just kind of, and I definitely want to do another one of those soon. I've got a couple that I've started, but then I get into these true crime. And this one had some recent developments, and that's why I was like really got interested in this and started researching it and looking into it. So you ready? This is the case of Susan Tice and Aaron Gilmore. The story begins in 1983 in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. On August 14th, 1983, Susan Tice, a 45-year-old mother of four, was murdered in her bedroom of her home. All right, let me give you, that's what happened, but let me give you a little bit more about Susan. Susan and her husband had recently separated and were living in different homes at the time. Her kids were away. They weren't there. And when Susan did not show up for family dinner, her family became alarmed. And so her brother went to her house and he noticed that her mail was piled up. Like her front door was locked, but the mail was piled up. So that's never good. Like she hadn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, clear sign.
Yeah, something's not
go
right.
Go check for a body.
Yeah, something. So, well, that's exactly what happened. So he went around back and that door was unlocked. All right. So he went upstairs and he found Susan dead in her room, and she had been sexually assaulted and stabbed to death. I think it had been a couple days. But the reason they figured out that the day that she was most likely killed was after a neighbor found out that her neighbor had been murdered. She said that on August 14th, she heard four separate screams that came from a woman at 1:30 a.m. And 15 minutes later, she heard someone walk by her house. They showed a picture of the houses on one of the YouTubes, and it said that the houses were like really close together. Mm-hmm. Obviously, maybe that's how they are in Canada or Ontario. But so she heard somebody like walking by her house, but she didn't call the police and just kind of, I don't know why, but I mean, you're living that close together. You're supposed to look out for your neighbors, but
yeah,
maybe sometimes people.
I'm a bad neighbor though.
Somebody say that four separate times at 1:30. Maybe. I'm not like
I would
going
like
after
make
this
my
lady.
Husband call.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe she lived alone. Maybe she
it's
scared
just
her.
So ingrained in me that snitches get stitches.
Well, and you don't want to like, get in the middle of any kind of domestic thing. And you didn't know. Obviously.
And that makes a circle back to the Anaya case that we covered with the witness that finally came forward.
And said you don't want to get in the middle of it. So I guess that's what people think. Sometimes you should be a little nosy name. I don't know if it would have made that much difference except for maybe she was there for a few days, so maybe it would have made a little bit of difference. Yeah. But so this is 1983, right? But they took DNA evidence that was left at the crime and they stored it, which I think is so crazy because they had no idea, all right? Because this case is big time on DNA. That plays a big factor in this case. So I just think it's so amazing that in 1983, like, they knew that it was their his DNA was left, but they knew to store it. It was just so weird that they didn't know that there would be like these advancements and all these things in DNA. Yeah. Just think
I've
maybe
never
it would.
About that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cold cases that they've gone back.
Absolutely.
How did they know to store it? And I'm sure there's like a preservation process that you have to go through.
They say, yeah, there is a certain way you need to store it for sure. And I think about that a lot on these cold cases, how odd that is. It's almost like we are a little psychic and we know that we're going to need something. So you've ever bought something and you didn't need it, but then later you're like, I'm so glad I bought that. Maybe they knew. Maybe it was some kind of weird thing, but it definitely came in handy. So I wanted to talk about that because I thought that was nuts how they did
that.
That's
crazy.
In 1983. All right, so about 4 months later, on December 20th in 1983, 22-year-old Erin Gilmer was found stabbed to death in her apartment within walking distance of Susan Tice's home. All right, she too had been sexually assaulted. Erin was the only daughter of billionaire and businessman David Gilmer. David adored his daughter, and of course her family was devastated, as I'm sure Susan's was as well, because she had four children. In the media, they wrote about Erin being a socialite and the daughter of a billionaire. She was also not just a socialite, was a sweet girl and a great big sister to her younger brothers. Her brothers, they said, had just stayed with her for a sleepover the night before she was murdered at her apartment. She was a fashion major at school, and she was a manager of a high-end boutique called Robin's Knits. The last time Erin was seen, it was by a coworker that left and when she was going to close up for work. So they left first, and then she closed up about 6 o'clock. Her apartment was above the shop. She finished her shift. This is what they assume happened. Went to her apartment. Her boyfriend, Anthony Monk, was supposed to pick her up at 9 for a Christmas party that night. So Anthony was running late because he had stopped by a bank to get some money. So he arrived at her apartment at 9:20, and he noticed that the store, you know, was closed, like it was supposed to be at 6, and her apartment light was on. So he headed in up to her apartment. He did notice that the door was cracked open to her apartment, which he assumed was left like that by Erin for him to come on in. So he walks on in and he walks into Erin's room and he says that her bedding was all like bulged up. It was a duvet cover and he pulled back the covers and he discovered her dead with like just lots of blood around her. And like I said before, she was sexually assaulted and stabbed as well. Just like at Susan's home, there was no forced entry to the house. The door was like Susan's door was unlocked on the back and then her door was cracked. I think they just, whoever it was left, and just left the door cracked. They again collected the DNA found at the scene. You know, they're just collecting that DNA thinking maybe one day, right?
Yeah.
So they thought possibly Erin knew her killer since he covered her body up with a duvet comforter, which I thought was interesting. They thought that must, like, when people feel bad if they commit a crime like murder and they know you, they don't want to look at you, so they cover it. That's what they say, I guess.
Right.
It's like a profile type. Is that what you call it?
Like, yeah.
So that was just because they had no leads. Like, they had no idea. And in both cases, I'm sure, I know in the Susan case, the husband is always, or the boyfriend is always the one that they
always
think that
is the first suspect.
Yeah, but they had been ruled out in both cases. They did say that friends had said that Erin had been getting obscene phone calls in 1983.
Oh, for caller ID.
Yeah, they definitely got calls like that. But I heard two reports that they had identified the caller and that person was cleared. But then I heard that they never identified the caller. So I'm not sure if it was the caller that was doing that, which, you know, this happened in 1983. There's articles, but not as much clear information, I guess. Her family put up a $200,000 reward for information that would help find her killer, which her dad being a billionaire, I'm sure he did that.
He could have anteed up a little bit.
I thought about that too when I read that.
Okay, if my dad's a billionaire and I'm missing, it better be...
She was already dead, but like, still, you want her
that's
killer.
Right, yeah, that's right.
You want her
already
killer.
Dead. Yeah. It's... like, you need to come forward and you're going to get upwards
in the millions.
Yes.
For sure.
Make it worth somebody's while.
Maybe they don't. Okay. I got another thought about that. Maybe they don't want to make it too expensive. $200,000 worth somebody's while. But
mean, yeah.
Maybe
I would
they
do
don't want
it.
To. Maybe they don't want to make it too big because somebody would frame somebody for millions. Okay. So they put that reward up. Obviously, that did not work. They had lots of theories that someone broke into her house and tried to rob her, and then she was there, and they killed her and sexually assaulted her instead. They had another theory that the killer had stopped her in the alley of the store and taken her inside her apartment since there wasn't any forced entry. My thought on those two cases, on the no forced entry, I think that the killer just, it was like a crime of opportunity. I think it was just these people had left their doors unlocked. that they had put their guard down. That's what I think. That whoever this was tried multiple houses that they obviously knew women. He had to have like kind of cased the place like no women lived alone. I don't know. But I just think that's weird that there was no forced entry.
Yeah. And one of the first things that I would look at is, which I'm sure they did, was a connection, which were in close proximity, weren't they?
That's a good thought, because for years this case and the case of Susan's went cold. They didn't even think the cases were connected. I think the only reason they didn't think it is because they were so different in age. The women didn't look the same. But yes, they were in close. They were in walking distance.
Okay.
And they were killed the exact same way.
Yeah.
Sexually assaulted and stabbed. So I'm pretty sure they should have at least thought there was some connection, but they didn't for some reason.
Whomever the person was that did it, if they did live in close proximity while he or she, because I don't know yet, was looking, or I guess scoping them out, because it seems
he had to have scoped them out
because did they some were both alone. Research that he could have very possibly seen them both.
I definitely think that there was some recon work, or maybe he knew where they hid their key. I don't know. It just seemed like that is something you have to factor in. No forced entry. How did both the doors were, the back door was unlocked. People do leave their back door unlocked.
And
a lot.
The 80s.
Oh, my gosh.
You, like, hide a key.
You're exactly right. Okay, that we never locked our door. Now, yeah. They're in Canada, and I don't know how what the crime scene was in Canada in that 1983, but in Alabama in 1983, no one locked their doors, period. Mm-hmm. So you're exactly right. All they would have had to do was walk in. So it probably wasn't, his chances were probably really good.
Yeah.
That the doors were going to be unlocked. So they did not think these were connected at that time. In the year 2000, with advancements in DNA, the two murders, the DNA that was saved had been tested, and they figured out that both of those DNAs were a match. They were the same person. And that was in 2000. They only have that their DNA was the same person for both crimes. The problem with that is this killer's DNA in the database, in the national database. Okay, so you've got DNA. You can maybe start working on a profile, which they did. But you've got no, if DNA is not stored of this killer, if he's got, you know,
right.
No criminal
records. I was going to say, you better hope they're in the database.
If they're not in the database, then that gets you nowhere. All right. It does is get you, you can later on remember they started being able, when they could do a profile, like on the JonBenet Ramsey thing, where they could do, they knew that this was a male, they knew that they were Caucasian, but that's all they really could do. That's doesn't really narrow you down to anything at that time. That's the case that's really bothered me for so long, the unsolved case. We might need to do that case. I think after I read that and just the more I thought about it, I definitely think it was an intruder. And I think they were in the house waiting. And that's how come it was so easy for them to sneak into her room. Okay, get back to the case. Sorry, I'm very ADD. And
I have been rabbit trailing tonight.
So where were we? So we were talking about how they had a DNA match, that these two murders were connected, right? But they did not know who this person was. So Susan's, one of her daughters, and it was just sad. They were just talking about how great her mother was, and she was the glue that held the family together, and that they didn't really realize it until after she was gone, which is sad, and that they just were just so sad about this case still not being solved. And Aaron's brother, she had two little brothers, remember? He was the one that spoke for the family because he said it was too hard for her mother to even speak about it, that her and her mother were best friends. And he said that Aaron's brother thought that the killer had to have a connection to these two women, which I just think they lived near each other, honestly. That was my thought. But Aaron's billionaire father, he built a chapel on an island that he owns. And the chapel had a stained glass of a picture of Aaron when she was little and dedicated it to her. There was something about when she was little, she was so upset about kids that were blind. She just thought it was so sad. And so he founded a school for the blind in the Bahamas in her memory. And he also founded all these other schools in rough areas in the world because he thought that it would help stop crime to educate these people that were born in places that didn't have the resources and education found. He did do some really great things.
Yeah.
That was a break in the case, but obviously they still had not found the culprit. Then finally, in 2019, all these investigators started solving cold cases with DNA left from culprits with forensic genetic genealogy called GED Match. Okay. It's like a thing that pulls from all this GED. Pulls from the Ancestry.com, Ancestry, the 23andMe.
Exactly. And I know this is crazy because I would only need to really worry about it if I were going to commit a crime, and I'm not committing it. But I will not send my blood in.
Neither will my sister.
I'm such a freak.
I did it. No, my sister will not do it, but it doesn't matter that you and her won't do it. You know why? because anybody that's related to you can do it. They can still, it's not your exact DNA, obviously, but it's going to be like a line of your DNA.
Like, I don't even have any logic behind
no,
it.
No,
I just don't feel right about it. And I don't want to put my blood in the mail.
Well, you spit in the thing. You don't put your blood in there. DNA. It's still your DNA.
Yeah. I don't want
to. Okay, that was happening. That's how they finally call it the Golden State Killer. Remember? It took a few years to eliminate. So we know the killer's great, great, great grandparents, same or cousins with this person. So it takes a pretty long time to eliminate everybody. So finally, it was in November, the end of November. After 39 years of these cases being cold, investigators cracked the case and 60-year-old Joseph George Sutherland from Moosonee, Ontario, has been arrested for the murders. His DNA was matched through his relatives. He's never been arrested before, but is now charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder. Where he's living now is a remote area in Canada. And they said that he went without force. They went to arrest him and they said they just think that he was waiting to be caught.
Yeah.
Because it took them a while, but they figured it out. Process of elimination and all that stuff. He was in his 20s at the time, and he did live in the area where the killings took place during the 80s. I think he would have been in his 20s, right? So now they've got to figure out what this guy's been up to, because he has no criminal record, which is crazy, for the last 39 years. Is he involved in other murders? Is he, other unsolved murders? Just strange that he has had no arrest and that he killed these two women in the 80s. And brutal killing.
Normally, if maybe he'd have stopped after one, still wasn't a good person. But I would definitely expect him to have a record if he had killed more than one.
I just think, if it was an accident or...
Or a one-time deal.
Even if it was a girlfriend, usually they kill again. But
yeah,
I definitely think it's strange that 39 years went by mm-hmm. and this guy's never been arrested. But I do think that it's him. DNA does not lie. One of Aaron's brothers said that it was the best call that his family had ever received that this guy had been arrested. He said, "We've been waiting almost an entire lifetime for this," which is true. 39 years. Could you imagine? The reason I like doing these cases is because it's just like the JonBenet Ramsey or any of these cases that are unsolved, that 39 years can go by and then they can solve it because of all these advancements in DNA and the genealogy, and then they can get their killer. It's crazy that he's been living for 39 years a free man, and that really stinks.
I know.
But at least he's not going to live the rest of his life.
No.
The end of his life, it's going to be in jail. It doesn't matter if you ever committed a crime, not that you would.
No.
All they had to do is if somebody in your family has submitted your DNA, then they can just link you to them. So that's what I tell my sister. I'm like, doesn't matter because you're still, if you don't give your DNA, somebody else in your family's going to.
I've never thought about it that way.
Yeah. It's still going to, you're still going to be linked.
Yeah. So I'm going to stay out of the crime business.
For sure. But the process of elimination, that had to take a long time. I get 23andMe notifications at least every month. But I think they only send them out every month. Otherwise, they'd be sending them out every day. And they're like, you have 24 new relatives. Most of them are third to sixth cousins. They're all over the world because it's so many. I have 1,500 cousins on the thing. So it does, you can do your percentage. You can set it where it says the percentage that you are. So I have my mom's brother. He's the number one only person that's done on 23andMe. He's the closest to my DNA. And then it's my dad's cousin, first cousin. And then it goes to second cousins, third cousins. Some of the people I do know, say the top 10, I know those people. But after that, I don't know any of those people of the 1,500. So it's pretty cool, really. Emma found she did Ancestry.com. She found my dad had a cousin that he never knew that he had when he was alive because his uncle had a child and was not married or whatever to this woman. And she never told her daughter who the father was. And we found it through on Ancestry.com through Emma's DNA.
I am going to test my dog's DNA. I'm serious. That's blind and deaf, and they have services that can do that. But I want to know what he's mixed with.
Okay, Emma did both her dogs' DNAs. That's what she asked for Christmas for me and Leanne. I got her one DNA test, and Leanne bought her one because they're $100. They're the same as the human DNA test.
Yeah, I'll do Ray, the blind and deaf dog, because I feel like he deserves to know his story.
For sure, he definitely does. And it's really interesting, the dog, what you think your dogs are, they're 20% of that.
Yeah,
I guess.
I'm not doing my GSP because of how much she cost, and I don't want to know.
Yeah, no, because it might not be right, and then you'll be mad.
And I've got papers and everything. She's not getting the DNA test.
A doctor shop, and look, you learned your lesson.
I got Remy, and this was from a responsible breeder, though.
Yeah.
Because I'm all about adopting and dog shop. Got a blind and deaf rescue.
I have a blind and deaf a-hole that's 14 and a half, but yours is young.
Oh, God, he is a lot.
How was he blind and deaf when he was young? Is he young?
He was born that way.
Oh, poor baby.
From misbreeding. But that's the thing is, I read that there are responsible breeders. And the lady that I got my GSP from, I've known her forever. She's not running a puppy mill. But now I'm just so adopt, don't shop.
I know. Me too.
And rescue is the best breed.
Yeah, it is. I wasn't always like that either. Like you say, Emma's the one that got me into that. And then I wasn't against zoos either. But Emma did a report on zoos in high school. And I'm traumatized by zoos now. Zoos are like the worst thing in the world.
Absolutely.
And just by the way, I wish this would get out into the universe that in that safari place that's right by here.
The Wild Animal Safari.
Yeah, okay. They have their two lions in a cage that's like as big as my living room. Okay. It's awful. That is so wrong. And I don't know why everybody didn't learn something from Tiger King. Still, the Montgomery Zoo at least had a bigger enclosure for their lions. Except for somebody posted one the other day and it looked really skinny and like sick. And I was like, that made me sad too. But that's Animal Safari. They need to just get rid of like their lions.
Yeah, the exotic animals.
Yes, yes. They can just have the farm animals. It'll be like a farm animal day with little pigs.
It's pretty much that because we took Hunter there.
It is, but did you see the lions? Because I went and you saw them. Depressing?
Yeah.
I know. They need to.
See, I forgot that they would even have that there. All I saw was just basically farm animals walking around. Just like.
That's what they should have.
Yeah. And we ended up wasting our money because we were more interested in it than the toddler. So.
Well, those need to go to a place that's like a tiger sanctuary.
Who wants to go to the circus? That sounds like hell. And I hate clowns.
We know. Okay, we got off on another tangent. Yeah. So we will end this episode. And thanks for listening.
Bye.